I'm Andy Banta. I'm a developer in the ESX storage team at VMware. I'm here to talk to you about iSCSI NAS and IP storage configuration for ESX server. Talk is going to be broken up into three general chunks. The first chunk is going to be overview of iSCSI NAS. I hope it's not too much of a review for too many people, and if it is, it'll be short. We'll get to the next part, which is how ESX is handling iSCSI and NAS. I'll go through some of the configuration setup, description of how you can configure both iSCSI and NAS with ESX 3.0. And the final part of the talk, I'm going to try to cover how... Thanks. I'll be covering how to actually configure an IP storage network so you can make the most of it. If you have questions while I'm talking and they're brief, I'll try to answer them. If they're going to take some length of time to answer, I'll try to answer them after the talk or at the Developers Cafe down in the exhibit hall immediately after this. I'll be there anyway. The first person whose cell phone rings gets to come up here and finish the talk. So what is iSCSI? iSCSI is just a SCSI transport of SCSI commands over TCP/IP. It's just like fiber channel or parallel SCSI. iSCSI is just another way of moving those commands back and forth. It's based on some internet standards, the Internet Engineering Task Force standards. SNEA actually has some standards for it as well. iSCSI is SAN-oriented. It's a lot like fiber channel in that case. You can have redundant paths. You can build a complete network. You can pretty much make your storage setup as simple or complex as you need it to be. iSCSI runs on a non-privileged service, is a non-privileged service that runs on port 3260. That's in the range that anybody can fire up a service on it. So pretty much anybody can set themselves up as an iSCSI target. I have some examples here of what iSCSI names look like. I'm not going to go into a big description of what all the various fields mean. I figured I would point it out, so if you're planning on deploying iSCSI and you start seeing names like this, you understand what they are. If you want a description of how the names are actually formatted, you can take a look at the IATF 3720. That'll describe how those names are formatted. NAS is network attached storage, basically sharing files over a network. Most common formats are NFS or SIFS. SIFS is also commonly known as the Windows sharing or Windows file sharing format, or SMB. Both are actually were the origin of file sharing in the offices. Before you had network file systems or NAS, there wasn't a whole lot of sharing was done by sneakernet or floppies being exchanged. NFS is what ESX does for NAS or network file systems, and it's once again an internet standard through IATF. I give you an example of how you would mount an NFS file or what an NFS mount point would look like, once again, just so you know what the name is. If you want more information on iSCSI, you can go to either IATF and look at a couple of the standards I mentioned. Also, iSCSIstorage.com has quite a bit of information, as well as people who are willing to sell you anything you want for iSCSI. For NFS, there's IATF as well, and the wiki page in Wikipedia is pretty good as well. This is just a simple SAN versus NAS comparison. In a SAN, you have a system that's connected through either fiber channel or IP to block storage, whereas in NFS or NAS, instead of it being block storage on the remote end, It's a set file format. The end result from the system's perspective is going to be pretty much the same. The advantage of using SAN is that you allow the OS to actually format the storage the way it can best make use of it, whereas NFS or NAS, you have a set file format on the remote end, and that's what you have to live with. Okay, so iSCSI and NAS are interesting, and I mean interesting to the industry and customers, not necessarily technically interesting, because they provide easy access to remote data and an easy way to share data. When you're sharing data, one of the advantages is that you end up having to get less total disk space, because instead of each person having their own individual disks with so much wasted space on it, you can jam more of these into a single shared storage array or target and end up with less wasted space. One of the primary reasons that iSCSI and NAS are interesting is it's inexpensive. In most cases, you don't have to go out and buy any additional hardware for your system. iSCSI, there are optional HBOAs or TCP/IP offload engines, TOWs, for speed up. Those, of course, kind of offset the inexpensive aspect of it. You end up paying for those. In low-end systems, you can actually use existing software to set up just about any general-purpose computer to be an NFS or an iSCSI server or a SIF server. In many cases, those systems can actually be less powerful than what typical desktops are now, because typical desktops actually spend an awful lot of time showing you video and whatever and have to have a fair amount of processing power to drive that graphics. Serving files, by comparison, is actually a fairly low overhead or low CPU operation. Another one of the reasons that it's inexpensive is that you can use existing infrastructure. You can use the cabling that's typically in most buildings these days. You can use the routers and switches that you use for Ethernet otherwise. Even if you have to buy more of them to handle your storage load, Ethernet switches are typically 10 to 20 times less expensive than fiber channel switches per port. And the adapters are quite a bit cheaper as well if you're just willing to use off-the-shelf NICs. iSCSI and NAS are good because, another way that you save money is that you don't have to train an administrative staff to know about fiber channel. If you have a staff that handles your internal networking already, running a storage network with Ethernet, it isn't much different than just internal networking in offices now. iSCSI and NAS are also good because they use existing network technologies. You don't have to go out and reinvent ways to do things that already exist, like authenticating or encryption. They're already built in. So NAS, from ESX's perspective and from customer perspective, is interesting just because it's everywhere. And anywhere you go is going to have some sort of file sharing set up, either using NFS or SIFS. I have an NFS server at my house that serves files for the various different systems I have there. It's an easy way to, once again, bring all your storage into one place and not have to buy as many disks, since you're doing storage conglomeration. With NFS or SIFS, you actually can use existing file system tools for doing things like backups or setting quotas, setting permissions for how people get to their files. You don't have to go out and use the layered applications that you typically find on storage arrays for shared storage there. There's nothing that says you can't use those layered applications if you actually have a storage array that does file service for you, like NFS or SIFS. And another nice thing about NAS is there are built-in permissions. You have permissions that say these users can access these files, and it doesn't matter what system they're coming in from, they still only have access to their files. With SANs, you typically have things set up or divvied up by per system basis, and you don't have a per user set of permissions. Right. So you can exploit security holes in NFS. I'm sure that a third of the people here know how to do that all by themselves. So with NFS, you have to be careful and have good administration to make sure that you don't have user duplication across various different systems, since it does count on the user ID for those permissions. So iSCSI is interesting for the industry and customers simply because it's a huge emerging market. IDC, one of the industry trend survey companies, is showing it at about 50 to 100% growth over the next 3 to 4 years. Gartner, another one of the companies, says that right now it's about a third of the attach rate for the SAN market, and their curves show it eclipsing Fibre Channel by the end of the decade. Once again, those are just projections from a marketing company, but it does show that that iSCSI is catching on pretty well. It has lots of backing from industry leaders. It also has lots of backing from lots of medium and small-sized vendors who are selling purely iSCSI arrays. Some of the medium-sized vendors are actually building storage arrays that compete with some of the companies listed there. And there's low-end that are just building JBODs that you have a bunch of disks and you put an iSCSI interface in the front end and you have a cheap storage array. So iSCSI is different than NAS. It's as I pointed out, it is just raw block storage. It's not a file system out there. And this works very good. This is beneficial for ESX because ESX actually wants to format the storage in this particular way. We would want to put a VMFS file system on it, and VMFS file system actually uses the raw storage a lot differently than NFS does in terms of how it blocks it out and how it keeps track of its metadata. iSCSI is a different approach to SAN from Fibre Channel. When they built it, they actually built in authentication. I should have said authentication rather than encryption, but they also specify that you can use IPsec with it. They also built in a discovery mechanism. Those are two things that were added on to Fibre Channel well after Fibre Channel had hit the street, simply so Fibre Channel could become a SAN technology. You can also use iSCSI for doing long-haul data replication. You can use the internet. You don't necessarily need to buy a bridge that takes you from Fibre Channel to either an internet-based standard or something that will go over existing dark fiber. So now I'm going to get into how VMware, how we at ESX do iSCSI. We do it a couple different ways. We do a software-based initiator that's entirely written into ESX. We started out with code from a Cisco reference implementation for an iSCSI initiator and modified it to work with ESX. It works with our the VM kernel stack that we have, our own networking stack. Just based on how the Cisco reference implementation was built, we actually do discovery and authentication through the service console. I have a configuration example, a screenshot later that shows how that's set up. Alternatively, we offer drivers for the QLogic iSCSI HBAs that are out there, the 4050C and the 4052C. These are, as of, like, I think a week from today, these will be production supported in ESX 301. We also have the 4010C supported experimentally. This means that you can use it for development and testing, but we don't support it in a production environment. The 4050C and the 4052C are actually resold by IBM as well. They might have slightly different names. I don't know what they are off the top of my head, but the built-in iSCSI adapters on some of the IBM blades are based on these QLogic HBAs. Did you have a question?
Yes. Is there any hardware iSCSI adapter?
We actually do see better performance with the hardware adapter, and the biggest thing we see is much less CPU usage. The software iSCSI initiator uses quite a bit of the ESX server CPU. The QLogic iSCSI adapters are dead on comparable with the fiber channel adapter on how much CPU they use. The QLogic iSCSI adapters actually look like any other SCSI adapter that you would put in your system, a fiber channel adapter, a parallel SCSI adapter. The ESX storage subsystem just says, hey, I can issue SCSI commands through this, and it works. It does its own networking, and this means that all of the networking capabilities of the QLogic iSCSI HBA are not exposed to ESX. You can't go in and do pings on those interfaces or put normal network traffic on it. The only thing that those interfaces are available for is iSCSI traffic. For both the software and the hardware, the QLogic iSCSI initiators in ESX, we take advantage of the existing storage infrastructure in ESX. The storage that's available just appears as more disk or actually, disk can be virtual storage, LUNs cut up by storage arrays, and it's just all available for ESX's use. And it does take full advantage of ESX's storage multipath capability as well.
So can you port-bind the
HBAs via RFID? No, we don't have any way of binding the HBAs at this point. Yes. Yeah. The QLA 4050 and 4052 have support for jumbo packets. We have not done any testing on it and therefore don't claim support for it. Yes. We don't have any support for any built-in or not built-in tow right now. So the features available in iSCSI through ESX are ESX boot support. You can actually boot ESX from an iSCSI array. This is available only with the QLogic HBAs. There's no capability to boot software iSCSI right now. You would do this by simply setting boot info in the BIOS on the iSCSI card, and the only limitation of that is that it actually means that you cannot do some of the configuration of the iSCSI card through your virtual center client. Any configuration of the iSCSI card actually has to be done through the BIOS and interface at that point. And since this often brings up confusion, of course you can boot guest OSs off either hardware or software iSCSI. It's just storage. So for target discovery, iSCSI offers a couple different ways of doing it. Send targets is a built-in method in iSCSI where you issue a request to an IP address, and that IP address will tell you of all the targets it knows about, whether they're on that IP address or another IP address. Typically, like dual-ported storage arrays will report all the targets on the address you talk to and all the targets that are available on the second port of that storage array as well. So when you issue this request, you'll get a list of targets. At that point, what ESX actually makes all of the storage that it finds available through Virtual Center. You can do some limitations through storage arrays in some cases to actually say that not all of the storage is available to that ESX host. Additionally, there's what's called static discovery in iSCSI, where you specify an IP address and an iSCSI name, one of those IQN names or EUI names that you saw in one of the earlier slides. In that case, ESS will only attach to that one particular target and only expose LUNs that are available on that target. That's only available through the QLogic HBAs. Right now, the software initiator actually requires that you do a send target discovery, and that's the extent of it. There's two other discovery methods specified in iSCSI. One of them is SLP. It's sort of like DNS, where you go out and you say, hey, I'm this system, what storage might be out there on the network for me? And the server will come back and say, this storage is available, and you can pick and choose from there. We don't have any support for it right now in ESX3 or ESX301. ISNS is another addition on top of SLP. It's very similar to the Fibre Channel name service. It does provide additional features like heartbeats, pings, and it can provide asynchronous notification if a target or a link goes down, similar to RSCNs if you're familiar with the Fibre Channel world. Once again, we don't have any support for that in ESX 3.0 or ESX 3.01. Microsoft offers a partial implementation of ISNS for free if you're interested. So NAS, or in particular NFS for ESX, is we wrote it from the ground up in-house. We didn't start with any other source base that's out there. Similar to the software iSCSI initiator, it uses our VM kernel network stack. And right now it's NFS version 3 over TCP only. We don't do any UDP on it. And we haven't done anything for NFS version 4 because we haven't seen a good reference implementation out there yet. Everybody seems to be sliding all over the place on the features, and we decided to go with one that was pretty well locked in. So with our NFS v3 implementation, we actually built in our own locking protocol. NFS v3 actually has advisory locks only. For ESX, we need mandatory locks. You do not want to be running two VMs off the same data store. So we have a least-based locking system on it. I'll get into how we do NFS configuration on ESX. We don't do any specification for locking or no locking. We tell it that we want to use this port and this mount point, and it's pretty straightforward. So the ESX features that NFS takes advantage of is, well, there's no BMFS3 or raw disk mappings. That's simply because you're already using an underlying file system, so you can't lay down a new file system, and you have no concept of an underlying disk mapping or LUN mapping. VMotion is, of course, available. You can VMotion a system from one server to another that's on an NFS mount. The locking will take care of allowing it to VMotion appropriately. You can do multiple paths with NFS using NIC teaming. I don't know if anybody here has signed up for Andrew Lambeth and Helly Zhou's talk on ESX3 networking this afternoon. It's at 2 o'clock. They are probably going to get into a lot more NIC teaming than I am here. If that's something that interests you, you might check it out. And we have no way of booting ESX off NFS. There's no network boot for ESX. You, once again, can, of course, boot guest operating systems. For security, we simply use the auth Unix auth host portions of NFS. That simply means that we use host name, username, and password as the security for it. Yes? On yes. 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 But it's not the same as the NIC teaming. It's not the same as network multipathing that we're talking about here.
Right,
the software initiator would use NIC teaming. the QLogic HBAs would use the storage-based multipathing, and actually I have quite a few slides on that coming up, so we'll get there. We don't have any support for Kerberos or any other security methods with NFS. Quite honestly, we haven't heard any demand for it. Yes? No, RDM is not remote disk management. RDM is raw disk mapping. The file that holds your VM on NFS can be shared, and actually the locking between the locking implementation that we added will allow you to VM that from one physical system to another. Yeah, as long as the file is shared. I'm sorry? No, it's an NFS formatted file system. Yes? It slows down snapshotting, but snapshotting is still possible. Okay. So just a quick list of what we currently have available for iSCSI NAS storage. We support EMC's Clarion Solera lines, the handful of NetApp filers, and the Equalogic PS series. For iSCSI, for NFS, we supply the almost identical Red Hat and Fedora NFS servers. You can also use NetApp filers and EMC Solera. We do have a self-certification plan for both the software and the hardware iSCSI initiators. I believe the hardware iSCSI initiator self-cert is coming out the same time as the QLogic fully supported HBAs. So the arrays and storage that we support will always be increasing. If you want the most up-to-date list, take a look at the HCL on our webpage. So I'm going to try to cover some of how iSCSI is configured on an ESX host. This will just try to cover some of the basics. I'm not going to try to go through every exact detail of what you would do. This is an effort to show you what it might look like. So with the administration, for administration, you can actually configure everything through the Virtual Center UI. QLogic cards are configured entirely through the storage adapter tab. You can go in and set up an entire QLogic iSCSI card and get your storage and be ready to go. The software initiator actually takes a few more steps. Because the software initiator is sharing the network stack with other parts of ESX, you do the network configuration of software initiator through your network setup, and then you go in and set up discovery and authentication through your storage adapter tab. We have tried very hard to make sure that configuration for all iSCSI initiators is consistent. If you see the page to set up a QLogic iSCSI card, it's going to look very similar to the page to set up a software iSCSI card or a software iSCSI initiator. We also have made sure that you do not need any vendor-specific tools. If anybody's familiar with the QLogic cards, either Fibre Channel or iSCSI, there's an application named StanServer. You can install StanServer, but you don't need to. We will do the entire configuration of that iSCSI card through our UI. We based our administration on SNIA, that's Storage Networking Industry Association standard. We did this so other third-party vendors could come along and they could write drivers for their cards and also write the management library for their cards, and they would just plug in and look like the cards that VMware ships through with ESX. So here's one of the screens that you would see for iSCSI configuration. You can see over here that we have VMHBA 1 is selected, and down below is some of the information on it. Here's the IQN name associated with that card. iSCSI also supplies a friendly name that you can give a card or an adapter. On the left side of the screen is actually the configuration screen for this adapter. You can see that it once again specifies the name and alias. We list the type of target discovery methods that are available. As I mentioned, the QLogic card supports both send targets and static targets. Down below is the iSCSI configuration information on it, the IP address, subnet mask, default gateway, DNS servers, and some of the stuff that's built into the card, the MAC address and the total speeds. So this is a page for a QLogic initiator, a hardware initiator. The software initiator would not have any of this network information because that's actually set up through the network adapter. The software page also would have a checkbox for enable and disable the software initiator. We didn't put a checkbox on for the QLogic card because we figured if you bought the card, you probably want to use it. So once you have your card set up, you can go in and specify discovery information. In this case, I've done a send targets or dynamic discovery where I've gone in and given it the IP address of an iSCSI storage array. And from this iSCSI storage array, it's already gone out and discovered a target associated with that. This target actually is at this IP address. The IP address, I believe, is actually cut off the edge of the screen because it was hard to get a full screenshot on a slide. So in the case of dual-ported storage, this would probably find multiple targets and those same targets at a second IP address. So for this example, this actually would find two targets at the address 200, and it would find the same two targets at the address 201, which is its secondary port. Just a quick picture of how we're attempting to support third-party drivers in this case. So down here you have your ESX server, and you can plug in a couple different HBAs. The service console sits off on the side of ESX and actually has this library that uses the iSCSI management APIs. There's a plugin that's associated with HBA1, and there's a plugin that's associated with HBA2. For this example, you could say that HBA1 is a QLogic card, and HBA2 is our software initiator. We've supplied both the drivers and the plugins for those. If another vendor wanted to come along, they can supply a card, a driver, and a plug-in, and setup of their iSCSI card on ESX would be the same as the ones that VMware supplies. One other comment I want to make on this is through our device driver kit, our device driver porting program, there are some kernel interfaces also, and we supply a plugin that allows you to use those kernel interfaces as well. There are kernel interfaces specified by 2.6 Linux as an additional configuration for iSCSI adapters, if anybody's interested. So, NFS configuration, once again, configured entirely through the Virtual Center UI. You go in and you set up an IP storage port through the VM kernel. You then go in and say that I want to mount some NFS storage, and in this case you simply specify an NFS server name or address and the mount point on that server. Once that storage is mounted, you can select it just like a VMFS volume or anything else as just storage for VMs. The data stores are used almost exactly like a VMFS2 or a VMFS3 volume. Of course, if you're using ESX3, you would not have VMFS2 volumes. So here's one of the pictures for NFS configuration. This actually applies for iSCSI configuration at all as well. If you're familiar with ESX setup, these are virtual switches that you would have set up in your network configuration. This upper switch actually has our VM network that has a couple of VMs attached to it and the service console port. It right now has one NIC attached to it. The the second vSwitch here is the VM kernel port where we would get our iSCSI, either our software iSCSI initiated initiator or our NFS mount. In this example, there's also a second service console port associated with the switch. If you're setting up iSCSI, this is actually what you need to do. If you're setting up software iSCSI, this is actually what you need to do because both the service console and the VM kernel need to be able to access that iSCSI storage. This is just part of how ESX has implemented it. The service console does the discovery and authentication and therefore needs to be able to talk to the storage array. Another thing that I did not do in this example, I regret at this point, is I did not show any NIC teaming on either switch. With NIC teaming, you would potentially have multiple NICs associated with each switch, and those would be multiple connections out to your network.
And those include the automatic lowdowns and failover, all the little stuff?
They include all of the features of NIC teaming, which is failover. There's some rudimentary load balancing that is built into NIC teaming if you set it up properly. I don't have enough time today to go into all of the features of NIC teaming, and actually I do believe the networking talk this afternoon will go into more of those features. So now that you've seen what you need to do to get ESX to set up to use iSCSI or NFS, I want to go through a little bit of how you should set up your IP storage network. It's not just a matter of getting a hub and plugging in your storage in your system. So I'll go through some of the guidelines that we recommend or attempt to enforce. Gig Ethernet equipment only. We do not do 100 megabit networking for anything. It just creates bottlenecks, and performance on the VMs is terrible if you try to use 100 megabit networking for either iSCSI or NFS. Yes?
It doesn't work at all.
So it's very poor. Okay. We recommend separate networks, and in our documentation we say that separate networks can be on separate VLANs. There's lots of companies and government agencies out there that also want data storage traffic on entirely or on separate networks than any administrative or regular network traffic. What I recommend for best performance is that you actually completely separate your traffic, don't do it through VLANs, and end up with separate physical networks. The reasons for this is even though you're partitioning your traffic, VLANs still share traffic across trunks and links, and if you have your storage traffic competing with your network with your normal network traffic, it's going to slow down your IP storage traffic. Another thing that you want to do is try to find and get rid of places that are going to cause drop network packets. A network ends up dropping packets because it's shared. The whole point of a network is that you no longer just have a wire between two points or a cable between two points. It's a way of actually sharing information or data. The reason that you end up dropping packets is that you can't put two packets. You end up in cases where the media cannot carry all the packets that it's being given. You can typically find this information through switches or the storage or servers on either end. And when you drop packets, TCP guarantees that data isn't lost. So the way that they guarantee data isn't lost is if you drop a packet, that packet gets retransmitted. If you end up retransmitting packet, it means that you've essentially used twice the network bandwidth due to get the same transaction done. And there's also some network hardware out there that is very slow to retransmit. And if you end up using any of that with your IP storage, you're going to be very sorry. Third thing for how to set up your IP storage network is use multiple paths for data availability. not integrity. But you want to make sure that you can actually get to your storage, even if you're if there's problems with your network or a card on your system or the a port on the storage. There's SCSI multipath configurations through the ESX storage subsystem, and there's also networking multipath configuration through the network system in ESX and the network system on some storage arrays. What combination you use of this depends on what adapters you're using, what storage arrays you're using. They offer it in different ways. Having a combination is good because it means that you have different places where you have redundancy, but it also makes the problem of figuring out how to handle multipathing more complex.
Is a team of two NICs usually enough for most systems?
I don't know what most systems are.
Say an average two-way box on APMs, average underutilized type VMs.
In most cases, probably yes, but it depends on what your applications are, and I'm not going to try to give you a general reference on how important your data is to you.
About how far off are we from 10 gig and ESX? How far out?
It's not 3.0 and it's not 3.01.
Yeah.
We're aware of it. We're working on it. Beyond that, I can't say anything. Yes? Actually, you can do some setup in NIC teaming to get around that. Okay, I'm sorry. He was asking if there was some way to handle NIC teaming where you could actually route the two NICs in your team through two different physical switches. There is a way to do that in ESX NIC teaming. I do not have the answer on how to do that right now. That would be something for the networking guys. Right now, the NIC teaming that we do does require it be on the same network, on the same subnet, whether it goes through the same virtual switch or not. And we'll get to more. Let's bring up more questions on this later. So here's an example of why you might be dropping packets on your network. If you have two systems that are attempting to do lots of IP storage write traffic to the same storage array, these guys can both be sitting here attempting to fill their gigabit link to the switch. And the switch is going to have a single gigabit link to the storage. That means that you're going to be dropping the other gigabit worth of traffic. This is, of course, an extreme case. And what's even worse in this case is because you're dropping the traffics, because you're dropping the packets, your retransmission traffic is going to start bogging down your network as well. So it's just by dropping packets, you're making the whole situation worse. It's with the network, you're expected to drop a few packets. When you start getting into dropping excessive packets, the entire network performance goes away. So in this situation, if you looked at the switch and figured out that it was dropping packets, one of the possible ways that you could handle this is running a second link to your storage on a second port. You would end up needing dual-ported storage in that case. It's otherwise there isn't a whole lot of a way of getting around it. There's some really poor throttling built into Ethernet. It's called Ethernet pause. We don't recommend using Ethernet pause. Most switch vendors don't recommend using Ethernet pause. Ethernet pause is not going to solve this problem for you.
Do you
support QoS? In ESX? I don't think so. If there's QoS, it's handled by the storage subsystem. It's not handled by anything particular in iSCSI, and we do not have any network QoS right now. So here's just a quick example of how to figure out if you're dropping packets. Information is typically available from storage arrays. You can also find out about drop packets from ESX through one of the proc nodes associated with VMKNet. I don't have that proc node off at the tip of my fingers. You can also get this information from managed switches. So this is just the output of some interface information from a Cisco switch. Just a quick description of what you're looking at here. So it's saying that we have an input hold queue. This will tell you how many packets are actually in that input hold queue. There's also a counter of how many input queue drop packets have been dropped. So if we look down here, we can see that our input hold queue has 3 packets in it right now. Input hold queues and switches are typically fairly small, and you know, 3 packets probably might be the capacity of the input hold queue. They're going to be not huge buffers, and when that buffer is full, it's going to drop it. So in this case, we can see that we've actually dropped almost 10,000 packets in this example. Now, if we take a look at the number of packets that we've actually received, we've only received 62,000 packets. So in this case, we're dropping like 1 out of every 6 packets. You are not going to be happy with the performance of this network. Typically, anytime that you see this number being even about 1% of this number, you're overdriving your network, and you probably need to come up with a better way of doing it. Okay, so multipathing within ESX, I'll cover the storage multipathing or the storage subsystem multipathing using SCSI first. ESX maintains the path information. So ESX maintains HBA number, target number, and LUN, and uses this to identify the storage. It looks at the storage, and there's typically vendor information on there and a serial number, and ESX actually uses that serial number to uniquely identify the storage that's out there. If ESX finds 2 LUNs or 2 targets that have the same serial number, it assumes, it says that, hey, this is the same storage, even if it's found it through several different paths. For the software SCSI initiator, even though we only have a single HBA on an ESX system, the software initiator is going to show up as a single HBA instance only. You cannot have multiple of them. The iSCSI initiator can see the same LUN through different paths if you have dual ported storage. In that case, ESX will say, hey, there's 2 paths to this, and it will use one path until there's possibly a failure on it, and it'll switch the other path. With multiple iSCSI or multiple queue logic iSCSI HBAs, you have the same multipathing information that you would with the software initiator, where if you have dual ported storage out there, it will show up as 2 paths. You can also have multiple HBAs in your system, so you get additional redundancy on your system and would see additional paths through each one of those HBAs. In that case, you would, if an HBA failed or if a link on an HBA failed, ESX would do an HBA failover to get to a path that it could use. I'm sorry? We support both. I'll get to that in a minute, actually. For anybody who saw Tom Phelan's talk yesterday, he actually talked quite a bit about the multipathing in ESX. So, actually, here's a quick example of how storage multipathing works in iSCSI. So I've selected this data store that's on the system. Here's some of the general information on it. Down here, you can see that there are actually 2 paths to it. There's an active path through VMHBA1, and there's a standby path or passive adapter through VMHBA2. In this case, they both show up as target 2. That doesn't have to be the case. They could show up as different targets on different HBAs. In this case, with an active passive or active standby setup, we use a path selection policy of most recently used. So we'll send data down a path until it potentially goes away, at which point we'll start sending data down the other path, and we'll continue sending that until until you manually switch it back to the original path, or the original path comes up and what you're currently using as your active path goes down. We do support active-active as well. Our path selection policy for active-active is fixed. So you choose a path. It will use that path as long as that path is up. If that path goes down, it'll fail to the second path. When the first path comes back up, it will go back to the original path. So in addition to the storage networking, we also have network multipathing with NIC teaming in ESX. This is useful for both software iSCSI and NFS. It, of course, doesn't work for hardware iSCSI because we have no way of actually getting into the networking configuration or network stack in hardware iSCSI. The way you do this is you set up multiple NICs for each VM switch. Go back to think back to the slide I showed that had the V switches on there. You could set up multiple NICs. In this case, NIC teaming will fail between different NICs if one of them loses link. As I mentioned, there's some rudimentary load balancing that NIC teaming can do. I'm not going to go through the full description of how to set it up, simply because it's time consuming to describe it. In this case, in addition to loss of link, there's also some other some other monitoring methods that NIC teaming can use, including what we call a beaconing system, where it can make sure that it can actually see an endpoint. If it can't see the endpoint anymore, it would potentially fail over. Storage multipathing isn't involved in this case. Of course, as I mentioned, you're going to end up with a combination of various different various different multipath setups based on whether you're using storage multipathing or network multipathing. With the software initiator, if you have a dual ported target on the other end, you'll see two paths through your storage multipath setup, and you will see, and if you have NIC teaming on the ESX end, you'll end up with dual network paths on the ESX end. So the last thing I wanted to cover was some storage arrays actually do handle multipathing on their end as well. This is typically known as transparent multipathing, and that's from the host perspective because the host really doesn't need to know anything about it. There's no configuration necessary in ESX. Both the hardware and software initiators understand this. It is something that has to be supported by the storage. It's based on what array vendor you're using and how it's set up. The storage actually maintains the information. The storage will keep track of what ports it's using for what connections. There's nothing that you can actually see through the ESX network configuration or VC. A virtual center, the storage basically does this by redirecting connections to an appropriate port on it. So, with iSCSI will attempt to make a connection to a port on the storage array, and the storage array will basically figure out that port is too busy right now and send a message back to ESX. Or back to the adapter that says, no, log into this port instead, or connect to this port instead, and your iSCSI traffic will go over that. In addition, it's not a very good picture of how it works, but in this case, if you connect to this port could be overloaded, and at which point it will tell ESX, no, log into this port instead. While it's running, it actually figures out that there's a load imbalance or whatever, the storage will also, at that point, terminate the connection with ESX. ESX will immediately try to restart the connection, and it will go find a port that's less active using the same approach. There's no discontinuity in anything that you would see on ESX. This happens instantaneously, and there's no storage loss, no hiccup with ESX. Yeah, This can be used with NIC teaming, with the storage multipath. It can be used in any combination. This is something that is array dependent. So if your array does it, we support it. So that's it. Any questions? Yes. I'm sorry?
Is any of the restrictions you outlined here impacted by 10 gigabits?
What restrictions in particular? No, not that I know of. Yes. I'm sorry? No, there's no portable mic. Yes, this is available. Yes. Who has the question? Okay.
Thank you.
No problem. More questions?
Good job. I'd go to talk to you.
There seems like there's some obvious advantages to using the software-based teaming over the hardware initiator. What's the performance difference between a software NIC teaming, DSX, and either one of the QLogic cards? Is there any performance loss?
Throughput is a little bit better with the QLogic cards.
10% better?
More than that.
Okay.
Okay. The biggest difference is CPU usage. And it's, if you have scads of spare CPU cycles on your system, that might be the way to go.
How much would it be impacted as a, can you quantify what the CPU usage would be impacted? Software versus the hardware?
Can you get a CPU to do that process?
You would not want to dedicate a CPU to that process because it's multi-threaded. You basically want to be able to get access to multiple CPUs. And the amount of CPU it uses is very dependent on the system. So the numbers that I know of are between 7 and 70%.
If you're in a VR scenario and you have the XW adapters, you're doing the SAN mirroring across a LAN, wouldn't it be easy to just do the XW adapters? Because then you can boot code host to whatever box you want them to be.
There was.
You can. iSCSI performance suffers some from WAN connection. You do need a very high speed WAN if you can do that, or a very low latency WAN. Okay, but that's a vendor, that's a storage specific setup.
How would you compare the software engineer iSCSI to the storage performance?
It depends on if you're just doing raw I/O. If you're trying to see how many blocks you can move, software iSCSI does a little bit better than NFS. If you're actually trying to run general purpose VMs, since you're using NFS formatting rather than VMFS formatting on the storage, you don't get any of the advantages that VMFS gives you. And I don't have a good number to quantify that.
I think what I'm hearing to say is you think they're about equal.
No, software iSCSI does have better performance than NFS in just moving raw data, but not a whole lot.
What's the hold up on the VCB not supporting iSCSI?
The VCB.
Probably
better. I don't know.
I have a customer using it right now with EcoLogic, and they say it works great.
But you guys not supporting?
Right, not supported yet. It's just not certified yet.
Yeah. Okay. Who was a backup expert?
I'm not sure who to go ask for.
It is on the requirements to make the
okay. Oh, there's our backup expert, Roshna.
No.
Yeah, yes.
The 4052 is going to be certified for production in the next couple of weeks. Is that going to be a new code drop, or is that going to be based on the 301?
It's the 301 code drop. We just finished testing on it.
Okay.
4050 and 4052, and that should be a week from today. Yes?
Are there any iSCSI targets that you guys actually certified on using Linux boxes as storage arrays? Because the source port is running right now, it's not certified, so we need to start it for us in a matter of hours. Do you want to take an old Linux box and actually reuse it? What do you guys recommend for ISCSI targets?
We don't. IET has exactly the problem that you're talking about, and it will never make our certification list for that reason.
So there's no other vendor right now who says we're going to write our own and it actually works.
No. Not that I know of.
No.